Hey everyone, welcome back. We're taking a deep dive today into a case that really shakes things up when it comes to splitting things up after a marriage ends.
Ooh, sounds messy.
Yeah, it kind of is. It's Lang v. Lang. It went all the way up to the Alaska Supreme Court, and it's all about how to divide up a pension, which is trickier than it sounds.
I can imagine, especially if one spouse is like, that's my money.
You know? Oh, exactly. And like, how do you even figure out what's fair? So just imagine this. You've got a couple, they've been married for 20 years, and when they decide to call it quits, the husband is the one making more money.
Okay, pretty common scenario. Happens all the time.
Yeah, but there's a catch with his pension that'll make you go, wait, how do you split that fairly?
I'm intrigued. Pensions can be tricky, so many factors to consider. It's not just about who has more money in the bank at that moment.
You know? Right, exactly. It's like untangling a whole web of, you know, who contributed what, and what about future earnings, and what if that pension isn't even a sure thing?
Lots of what ifs.
So many what ifs. Okay, so let's go back in time, all the way back to 1964, when Kenneth and Marla Lang said, I do.
Back when avocado green appliances were all the rage.
Maybe. But here's where it gets interesting right from the start. Marla, the wife, she came into the marriage with more stuff, a house, some death benefits, and a car. Kenneth didn't really have much to his name money-wise.
So she was the one with the assets.
Yep. But fast forward 20 years to their divorce in 1984, and the situation's totally flipped. Now Kenneth is making way more than Marla, who's working as a receptionist and also dealing with health problems like arthritis and maybe even MS.
Oh, wow. So their financial situation really changed over time. That's a really important point.
Yeah. Highlights why courts don't just look at who has more money when the divorce happens. They try to look at the bigger picture.
Right. They got to look at the whole story.
Yeah. And to do that, they use what are called the Merrill factors. It's basically a way for courts to look at things like someone's health, how much they can earn, and how long the marriage lasted, all that stuff. So it's not just cut everything in half and be done with it.
Not always. Courts can get creative to make things fair. In this case, the trial court actually gave Marla a bigger percentage of the assets. It was something like 58% for her and 42% for Kenneth.
Whoa, so they really did try to even things out.
Yeah, they were trying to make things fair because of Marla's health problems and because she couldn't earn as much as Kenneth could with his, you know, better salary.
Okay, but hold on. Didn't Marla bring more assets into the marriage initially? Doesn't that mean she's getting more than her fair share? Like a double dip?
That's a good question, and it's where things get a bit tricky. So those assets she brought in, they probably increased in value during the marriage, right?
I guess so, yeah.
Exactly. And the court said that increase in value is considered marital property. It's like saying the growth of the investment is shared, even if one person put in the initial money.
Makes sense. So it's not just about who owns what on paper at the beginning. It's about how those things change while they're married.
Exactly. But now let's talk about the really interesting part of this case. Kenneth's pension. And this is where things get, well, kind of messy.
The pension predicament.
Right.
Lay it on me. What's the deal with this pension? What does it even mean for it to be non-vested?
Okay, so basically it means Kenneth hadn't worked at his job long enough to actually get all that pension money if he decided to leave.
Oh, so it's not guaranteed.
Not yet. It was kind of like if he left the job too soon, he might lose out on all that money he'd been putting into the pension plan.
Wow, that's risky.
Yeah, it is. And that's where the legal battle really gets heated. See, the trial court, they just treated the pension like any other asset, like a car or a house. They said, let's figure out what it's worth right now and split it up. But then the Alaska Supreme Court stepped in and said, hold on, not so fast.
What? They didn't like that idea. Why not?
Well, they thought it was way too risky and unpredictable. They were like, what if Kenneth leaves his job tomorrow? Then that pension money could disappear and Marla would get way less than what she should.
Oh, so it was all about protecting Marla, making sure she wasn't left high and dry if things changed.
Pretty much. So they told the trial court to go back and try a different approach.
So what did they suggest instead?
They gave them a couple of options. One was to use something called a QDRO, or they could just wait and see what happened with the pension.
QDRO. That sounds complicated.
It stands for Qualified Domestic Relations Order. It's basically a legal order that's designed to figure out retirement benefits when a couple gets divorced.
Okay, so it helps to split up the pension fairly, even if it's not a sure thing yet.
Exactly. So even if Kenneth left his job before the pension was fully his, Marla would still get her fair share. It's like a safety net for her.
Makes sense. And what about that other option?
Yeah.
Just waiting to see what happens.
Yeah, that's called reserving jurisdiction. It basically means The court hits the pause button and waits until the pension is fully vested.
So they wait until it's a sure thing and then decide how to split it.
Yep, that way they know exactly how much money they're dealing with.
Smart. But wait, did everyone on the Supreme Court agree with this whole QDRO or wait and see approach? Or were there any, like, dissenting voices?
You know, there was actually one justice, Justice Burke, who wasn't too happy with the majority's decision. He thought the trial court should have more wiggle room, you know, more flexibility in these kinds of situations.
Interesting. He wasn't a fan of limiting the trial court's options, huh? So what was his main argument?
He didn't think using a present value calculation was necessarily unfair, as long as everyone knew that the pension might not actually pay out.
So it was like a clash between wanting clear rules to protect people versus giving the court some freedom to decide based on each specific case.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Justice Compton, who wrote the majority opinion, he was really worried about things being unfair, especially if Kenneth left his job and that pension money vanished. But Justice Burke thought that being too strict could also lead to some unfair results in other situations.
Hmm. Tough call. So in the end, the majority wins out, right? What happened next? Did they actually use a QDRO or did they reserve jurisdiction?
Well, the trial court had to go back and figure that out.
Okay, so we kind of left things hanging.
Yeah, a little bit of a cliffhanger. But, you know, this part of the case shows how courts try to balance things. On one hand, they want to make sure people are protected, especially in situations like this where someone's financial future is uncertain.
But on the other hand, they don't want to be too rigid and create rules that might be unfair in other situations.
Exactly. It's a constant balancing act. And it makes you think, you know, how would you approach a situation like this? What factors would you consider most important?
Lots to think about. It's definitely not as simple as it seems on the surface.
Not at all.
All right, well, we've covered a lot of ground already. The initial setup, the shift in finances, those Merrill factors, and now this whole pension predicament. But there's still more to unpack, so stay tuned. We'll be right back with more of our deep dive into Long v. Long.
So reserving jurisdiction basically means the court kind of, like, puts things on hold. They don't make a final decision about the pension right away.
So they wait it out.
Yeah, they wait until the pension actually vests, when they know exactly what it's worth, and then they figure out a fair way to split it.
Makes sense. It's like kicking the can down the road, but in a way that makes sure both sides are protected.
Exactly. It's all about fairness and predictability.
But did everyone on the Supreme Court agree about this? Or were there some judges who thought differently?
Ah, you're picking up on the nuances. Nice. Well, there was actually a dissenting opinion from Justice Burke. He wasn't entirely on board with the majority's view.
A dissenting opinion? Oh, this is getting juicy. Tell me more. What did he disagree with?
He felt that the trial court should have more options, more flexibility in cases like this.
More flexibility. Interesting.
Yeah, he didn't think that using a present value calculation to figure out the worth of the pension was automatically unfair, as long as everyone involved understood that the pension might not actually end up paying out, you know.
I see. So it was kind of a debate between wanting to have clear rules to protect people and giving the court some room to decide what's fair based on the specifics of each case.
Exactly. A classic legal dilemma. Justice Compton, who wrote the majority opinion, he was really focused on making sure things were fair for Marla, especially if Kenneth left his job and that pension money disappeared. But Justice Burke was worried that being too strict could end up being unfair in other situations.
Hmm. Yeah, I can see both sides. It's tricky.
It is, for sure. But remember, in the end, the majority opinion is the one that sticks.
Right, so the trial court had to go back and either use a QDRO or reserve jurisdiction.
Exactly. They couldn't just do whatever they wanted anymore.
And even though Justice Burke didn't get his way this time, his dissenting opinion could still be important, right? It might influence other judges in the future.
Absolutely. Dissenting opinions can be super influential. It's like planting a seed. Even if an idea doesn't win out right away, it can still shape how people think about the law down the road.
So it's like he's saying, hey, we might not have won this time, but keep this in mind for future cases.
Right. Justice Burke's arguments about flexibility could resonate with other judges later on, especially as things change, you know, how people handle finances, retirement, all of that.
Speaking of changes, QDROs seem like they're becoming more and more common in divorce cases these days.
You're right, they are. It's partly because traditional pensions where you get a set amount of money every month after you retire are becoming less common.
Like those old school pensions.
Yeah, exactly. They're not as common anymore. Nowadays, it's more common for people to have 401ks and other retirement plans where the amount of money you get depends on how the investments do.
Oh, right. So those are less predictable.
Exactly. And that makes them harder to divide up during a divorce.
So that's where QDROs come in.
Yep. They're becoming really important tools for making sure things are fair when couples with these more modern retirement plans split up.
Especially if one person has way more saved up than the other.
Right. The court needs to make sure the person with less savings isn't left behind.
It's really interesting how a case from 1984 like Lang v. Lang is still so relevant today.
It is, isn't it? It shows how some of these basic legal principles about fairness and making sure both people are taken care of financially after a divorce, those ideas are still so important.
Totally. Okay, so we've got the majority opinion, the dissenting opinion, and some insights into how retirement planning is changing the landscape of divorce law. Anything else we should touch on before we move on?
Oh, I'd say there's one more key point from Justice Compton's opinion that's worth highlighting. He emphasized that the whole purpose of retirement benefits, like pensions, is to give people a sense of security later in life.
Yeah, you work hard your whole life. You deserve to have some peace of mind knowing you'll be okay financially when you retire.
Absolutely. And Justice Compton was worried that using these present value calculations for pensions that weren't even guaranteed could actually undermine that sense of security, especially for the spouse who might be more reliant on that money.
Right, because if the person with the pension changes jobs and it loses value, their ex-spouse could be in trouble.
Exactly. So by using a QDRO or reserving jurisdiction, the court can help protect both people's financial futures, even if it takes a bit longer to sort everything out. It's about taking a long-term view.
I like that. This is a good reminder that divorce law isn't just about splitting up stuff. It's also about thinking about the long-term consequences and making sure everyone is able to move forward with their lives.
Couldn't have said it better myself. And that's something that all lawyers, especially those working on family law cases, really need to remember.
All right. Well, I think we've covered a lot of ground in this deep dive into Lang v. Lang, from the facts of the case to broader issues in divorce law. But what does it all mean for lawyers and law students, those who might be dealing with these issues in real life? That's what we'll be discussing in our final segment. All right, welcome back. We've been talking all about Lang v. Lang, this fascinating case from Alaska about dividing up a pension during a divorce.
And it's not as simple as you might think, is it?
No, not at all. Lots of twists and turns. But we've covered the facts in the case, the different opinions from the Supreme Court justices, and even how retirement planning is changing the way we think about divorce these days.
A lot to digest, for sure.
Definitely. So now in this last part, let's think about what all this means for lawyers, especially those who are working with clients going through divorces.
Yeah, the rubber meets the road, right? How do we actually use these legal principles in real life situations with real people and their money?
Exactly. So let's break it down. What are some of the key takeaways from Lang v. Lang for our listeners out there, especially those lawyers and law students who might be dealing with similar cases?
I think one of the biggest lessons, and we see this again and again in the Lang case, is the importance of documentation.
Documentation. You mean like keeping good record?
Exactly. Whether it's health problems that are affecting someone's ability to earn money, or how much those assets they brought into the marriage have increased in value, or even contributions to a pension after the couple has separated. It all needs to be documented carefully.
So it's like, if you can't prove it, it didn't happen.
Yeah, kind of. Or more like, if you can't prove it, you might not get what you're entitled to.
Makes sense. So if you're a lawyer helping a client who's going through a divorce, you really need to stress how important it is to keep track of everything, every financial detail.
Absolutely. Things like bank statements, pay stubs, property appraisals, even emails or notes about financial decisions. It can all make a huge difference in the outcome of the case.
Wow, so even a casual email could be important evidence.
You never know what might become important later on. It's always better to have too much documentation than not enough.
Good point. So documentation is crucial. What else?
Another takeaway is the need to really dig into those Merrill factors we talked about before. You know, age, health, earning potential, length of the marriage.
Right, all those things that paint a picture of the couple's financial situation.
Exactly. And they help the court decide what's truly fair when it comes to dividing up the assets. Because remember, as we saw in Lang, equitable doesn't always mean 50-50.
Right. Sometimes one person might need a bigger share to make things fair.
It all depends on the situation. Each case is unique.
Okay, so we've got documentation and those Merrill factors. What else should lawyers keep in mind?
Well, I think the biggest takeaway, especially for lawyers in Alaska, is to be really careful when dealing with non-vested pensions.
Ah, yes, the pension predicament.
The Alaska Supreme Court made it clear that they don't want courts using present value calculations for pensions that aren't fully guaranteed. They prefer QDROs or reserving jurisdiction.
So if you're a lawyer handling a divorce in Alaska and there's a non-vested pension involved, you better know the Lange case inside and out.
Absolutely. It's your roadmap. But it's important to remember that laws and precedents can be different in other states.
Right. So always do your homework and make sure you're up to date on the laws in your jurisdiction.
But even if you're not in Alaska, the big ideas from Lange are still really relevant. The focus on fairness, financial security, and taking all the relevant factors into account. Those principles apply everywhere.
It's like we've learned a formula for fairness from this case that we can apply to other situations, even if the specific legal details are different.
That's a great way to put it, because at the end of the day, we're not just dealing with numbers and laws, we're dealing with people's lives.
Right, people who are going through a major life change and need to know that they'll be okay financially.
Exactly. So as we wrap up our deep dives into Lange v. Lange, we wanted to leave you with something to think about.
Ooh, a final thought to ponder. I like it.
Imagine you're the judge in a divorce case, and you have to decide how to divide up a pension that's not fully vested. What would you do? What would be your top priorities? How would you balance the need for fairness with all the uncertainties of the future?
Tough questions. No easy answers.
And that's what makes it so interesting. Wrestling with these kinds of dilemmas and looking at things from different perspectives, that's how we learn and grow as legal professionals.
Well said. And on that note, we're going to wrap up this episode of The Deep Dive. We hope you found it informative and maybe even a little bit thought-provoking.
Thanks for joining us.
And until next time, keep those legal minds sharp. And remember, fairness is always in style.